of the BBC, The Naked Scientists.
Well, a very good evening to you. Welcome to this week's edition of The Naked Scientists. It's me, Chris Smith, Kat Arney and Helen Hendry here with you on, I would say, this fine Sunday evening, but it's not, is it? The weather has finally started giving us some rain at last, which is good news for our garden because it's gone completely brown and cracked up, so we really do need some rain. Welcome to this week's edition of the programme. As usual, we're stripping down science and taking your science questions live on the air. If you would like to put a question to us, we'll tackle anything and everything you can throw at us. We'll try and get you an answer. We'll do our best. It's 08459 25 2000 if you want to give us a call, 08459 25 2000. Or you can email me, chris@nakedscientist.com, chris@nakedscientist.com. Now, we'll take any questions, but we are devoting tonight's show, because Halloween is on the way, to the paranormal. Very X-Files-esque, but we have two guests who are experts in their fields for you this evening. Tony Cornell, who will be coming on first, has devoted his life to the study of ghosts. He goes looking for ghosts. He's what we call a psychical researcher. I don't know if he's ever seen a ghost. We'll find out shortly. But what do you think about ghosts? Do you think that ghosts exist? Do you think that they're a figment of our imagination? Do you think it's really something that we should be looking into? If you have any strong feelings, we want your ghost stories, your experiences, and we want them on the phone as soon as possible. So give us a call, 08459 25 2000. Tony's an expert and he'll help you out. Coming up later on in the programme, we'll also be talking to another expert on the paranormal, Professor Richard Wiseman from the University of Hertfordshire. Richard is also an expert on spooks and the paranormal, but Richard has an alternative theory of what ghosts really are, so he'll be coming up later too. But we'll also be taking a look at what's been going on in the world of science and technology, and here's Helen and Kat with a rundown of what else to look forward to on tonight's programme. Helen.
Yes, today we're going to be revealing the science behind why you can wait for a bus for hours on end and then three come along at once. Keep listening also to find out how soon we might all be wearing clothes made out of stinging nettles. And we'll also have a look at a study that has scientifically proven, rather unshockingly, but apparently we now have proof that fast food actually makes us fat. And finally, we'll be looking also at a story about how Japanese fishermen are being plagued by enormous jellyfish that apparently are a metre wide. So that's quite scary. So we'll keep listening to find out about that. Over to Kat.
That does sound like a Halloween-styled horrible thing, actually. So I'm just here to bring you some news about our quiz that we have every week, the Science Fact or Science Fiction quiz. The rules are very, very simple. You phone in. If you want to phone in to ask a question, we'll get you for the quiz as well. We give you three science facts. They may be true, or they may just be facts that we've made up. So you have to guess which is right, which is wrong. And the prizes this week are very, very special. But they rely on you being free tomorrow evening to get into central London to the Royal Institution, where they have the Christmas lectures every year, which you may have seen on the TV. And tomorrow night, there's a very special meeting between Susan Greenfield, who's a very famous scientist, and Heinz Wolff, who older listeners may remember from the Great Egg Race. And they're going to be having a debate at the Royal Institution all about the role of technology in society, how science is shaping us. Can we do anything about the march of technology in our lives? So that's going to be very interesting. And we have tickets to get you into that tomorrow night down in London. And I think you get a free glass of wine as well. So that's got to be worth it. So phone in now for the quiz. 08459 25 2000. And we have adults' questions and kids' questions, so just get phoning in now. 08459 25 2000.
That's right. The programme is for everybody, all ages. We hope to be able to satisfy everyone's appetite for science, technology and medicine this evening. We've had some questions coming on the website this week, some really good ones, actually. This one, which is, why is the sea salty? Why is the sea salty but rivers and lakes aren't? We'll be giving you the answer to that one. Or if you'd like to contribute your own answer, give us a buzz. 08459 25 2000 is the number to call. Also, why is snow white? Not Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but why is snow white? Why is it a white colour? And also, why is it that the sea gets foamy on a windy day? Those are all still to come.
The Naked Scientists, sponsored by Copus.
So, before we go to the answers to those questions, which I'm very intrigued to know why snow is white. I was always told not to eat the yellow snow, but I don't think that's related to it. But we've just had some fan mail, which is really lovely. This is from Sonia, who's a nurse. I'm not sure, where is she, Chris? Somewhere in Cambridgeshire.
I think she's in Cambridgeshire because she sent us this email this week, but it says that she's listening to us in Cambridge. So
hello, Sonia. She says, I just wanted to say what a great show you do on Sundays. I listen when I'm cooking the dinner on Sunday night. So now you have us to listen to. That's great. You're a registered nurse, but didn't like science at school, except human biology, because it's kind of a bit yucky, isn't it? And a bit rude, human biology. So it's quite interesting. And so now she's very glad that we can provide all the answers for her kids' questions. So thanks very much, Sonia, and keep listening.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you very much. If you would like to give us a call, 08459 25 2000, or you can email us, chris@nakedscientist.com. We'll take anything that you would like us to try to tackle here on the programme, or if you'd just like to make a point, there's something you think's important about science, technology or medicine in this country or abroad, we're quite happy to talk about it. Get your point on the air. Now, this question, why is the sea salty, but rivers and lakes aren't? Well, this is something which I've wondered for a long time, actually, and the answer is actually very simple, and it all comes down to a thing called the water cycle. Now, rain comprises fresh water, and that falls out of clouds in the sky, obviously, onto the land, and it finds its way into lakes and streams, and it also goes back via the ground and into the sea. But as it goes through those routes, it picks up salts, which it dissolves from rocks and things as it passes over them on its way back to the sea. And obviously, as it gets to the sea, it deposits all those salts and things that it's dissolved in the seawater, but the sea is continuously being evaporated by the heat from the sun to make clouds again. And the salt is too heavy to be evaporated, and it gets left behind, because the clouds are comprised of just fresh water. So the sea is continuously picking up salt off of the land, and over millions and millions of years, it's reached its present level of salinity. The minerals that are dissolved in the sea off of the land have accumulated to the present day levels. So does this mean the sea's actually getting more salty, though? And the answer is probably not, because it's now reached a sort of a situation of what we would call equilibrium, where if you added any more minerals to the sea, they would continuously get removed in the form of sort of chemical reactions that would take them away and keeping the sea at about the same level of salinity. Kat?
But is the Dead Sea not more salty than the normal sea? That's why you're more floaty.
Absolutely
is that
right.
A special circumstance.
Absolutely right. The Dead Sea is far more salty. So how does that come about? And the answer is that the Dead Sea was probably connected to another sea once upon time and has now been isolated all on its own. And the simple case of the Dead Sea getting more salty is that there is more water leaving it in the form of evaporation than rivers are giving the Dead Sea back. And so it's slowly accumulating more salt than the normal sea does.
It's very cool, though. You can go
have
in
you
it.
Floated have you been in it?
I floated in the Dead Sea, yeah. It's very spooky.
But there's a real problem with the Dead Sea, and that is that because, literally, maybe the weather and the climate's changing, but there is not enough water reaching it now. I think that local neighbouring countries have something to do with it too, because it's fed by rivers and there are now dams in those rivers and water's being taken away to feed irrigation projects. But there's less water getting into the Dead Sea than used to, and so it's actually receding and it really is in danger of drying up.
That's cool. Can we all go and pour water into it? I suppose it wouldn't be so salty.
I think some
then,
people do in their own kind of way sort of pour water into it, but let's leave it there. Now, Helen, we've got this question which came in from David and Jackie, which says, we've been to Southwold, which is near in Suffolk. It's on the east coast, not far from here. And on a very windy day, we noticed that the sea was getting very foamy, but the sea there has a reputation for being very clean and it has a blue flag and all that kind of thing. So we don't think it's pollution. Why does the sea get frothy on a windy day?
Yes, well, that is all due to organic matter that's basically dissolved in the seawater. Mostly sort of proteins, actually, that come from tiny plants that are found naturally in seawater called phytoplankton. And because of this organic matter, it gives surface tension to the water. And when air is injected into the water, into the sea, so either through the wind when it's a windy day or when there's lots of wave action, because of the surface tension from this organic matter, it basically forms bubbles. And it's much the same as when you froth your hand around in the bath and you make bubbles that way. And it is associated with pollution in one sense, because when you have got lots of nutrients coming in, perhaps from sewage outfalls or whatever coming off the land, this actually causes a growth in more phytoplankton. So you've got more proteins and organic matter in the sea and therefore more froth. So it's not actually the pollution itself, but it's a consequence of the nutrients coming in, perhaps from a sewage outfall, that will make your phytoplankton grow more. And so you get more froth. So that's why you get frothy seas.
That's very reassuring. Thank you very much. Kat, what do you got in front of you?
So I have a story here that it is a scientific proof of something that we've always suspected for a very long time, that fast food does make you fat. But it's actually been shown to us now by the Medical Research Council why this is so. And they released a study this week that shows that it's the energy density of a meal that's important rather than the size of the meal.
So what actually is the energy density?
So energy density means how many calories per weight of food. So junk food has a very high energy density. So it's in a given like burger, it's got a lot of calories in it.
My Mars bar here.
Very energy dense. Looks delicious. So that if foods with a lot of fat in, particularly, and a lot of sugar, and without a lot of vegetables and things like that, they tend to be very energy dense. So for a fast food meal apparently has an energy density 1.5 times bigger than a normal British dinner. And that's staggeringly 2.5 times bigger than the normal meals they eat in Africa. So if you eat foods that are very energy dense, you may not realise exactly how much calories you're eating because you're eating a relatively small portion, so you can't really work out what you're doing. And the MRC team tested this by getting volunteers to eat two different sets of meals or different sets of meals, and they doctored them secretly to have different energy densities in the same size meal. And they found that the people with the more energy dense meals got fat, obviously, because they didn't really work out how much they were eating. But it's not just junk food, you know, fast food, burgers, that are very energy dense. There's also supermarket ready meals and convenience foods that these scientists warn us about. And it's actually a serious problem. I found out that it costs the UK more than £2.5 billion every year for the problems of being overweight. So the MRC have firmly shown that junk food manufacturers might be to blame for this. So perhaps we'll see health warnings like
issue not so long ago about this thing called the French paradox, which is the Americans are very concerned as to why it is that the French seem to eat so much junk food, but they're comparatively slim and svelte. Yet the Americans eat huge portions and they're huge themselves, and so are a large proportion of this country now. Why is this apparent disparity? And the answer is that when they actually measured the size of food portions in the US and compared them with the size of food portions in France, yes, the French do eat a diet which is comparatively richer in fat, but in total aggregate number of calories, the Americans are still eating a hell of a lot more. Now, just time to sneak in a very quick story, which is for the second year in a row, thousands of huge jellyfish measuring over a metre across have been plaguing fishermen along the west coast of Japan. Now, scientists are blaming global warming for this and a rise in local sea temperatures for the appearance of these massive jellyfish. And the fishermen are have got the most to moan about because they're claiming that the jellyfish are actually stunning and killing all of their fish in their nets and their shrimps, which is cutting down their revenues. So if you want to see some massive jellyfish, sounds like Japan's the place to go. Helen, have you ever seen a jellyfish like that, the size of that? Because you're a marine biologist, aren't you?
Yeah, I've seen lots of jellyfish and been stung by quite a few in my time as well, but not that big. It would be pretty cool. I'd like to see that.
I mean, maybe what sort of jellyfish is a metre across then? Is that a specific type? I mean, what types are they that actually become that large?
I don't actually know. I think they don't know very much about that particular species, and that's why it's such a strange phenomenon and why they've grown in such huge numbers as well. I've seen fairly small jellyfish in large numbers, but only about half a metre across, and that's bad enough, I'll tell you.
Laying the facts bare, the Naked Scientists.
Right, we are devoting tonight's programme to the investigation of the paranormal because Halloween is on the way. 08459 25 2000. We want your questions about ghosts, ghouls, hauntings, poltergeists, that kind of thing. Let's head over to line 19 where Carol is in Claxton. Hi, Carol.
Hello, Chris. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm okay. Are you enjoying our programme?
It's absolutely excellent. We listen to it every week.
Do you?
Yes.
God, wow, how do you fancy going off to the Royal Institution tomorrow?
Well, that's wonderful, but I'm afraid we wouldn't be able to, and I'm sure that some young person would really get more out of it. My husband and I, we wouldn't be able to get up to London.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Well, of course, we do have other prizes on standby I could give you instead.
Okay.
I actually have some rather nice books up my sleeve, which I could send your way. How would you like to win one of those?
Rather nice.
Because I'm just thinking, because you want to talk to us a bit about ghosts, and we've got Tony waiting to talk to you here, but I was just thinking, rather than interrupt the conversation, we could give you a chance to have a win of something, and then we can let you have a chat to Tony. How do you fancy that?
Well, I'll have a go.
All right, then. Have you heard Science Fact or Science Fiction?
Yes, I have.
All right, then. So you're acquainted with how you play it?
Yes, I am.
All righty, then. Here we go. Number one, people with blood group AB can give blood to anybody. People with the blood group AB can give blood to anybody. Science fact or science fiction?
Oh, blast. Fact.
No, AB people are the what's known as the universal receivers. They can get blood from anyone, but a blood group O are known as the universal donors.
Yes, of course.
OK, next question. IQ, that's your measure of intelligence, stands for intelligence quota. IQ stands for intelligence quota. Is that science fact or science fiction?
I really don't know. I'll go fact.
I'm afraid not, no. It's actually intelligence quotient, so it's quite a difficult one, I have to say. But
you sound a bit croaky there, Helen.
Sorry, I've got a bit of a cold this week.
Right, next question then, Carol. Are you ready?
Yes.
Mosquitoes can smell carbon dioxide. Mosquitoes can smell carbon dioxide. Fact or fiction?
No idea. Fact.
That's actually right. Yes, that's how
they... Don't sound so surprised.
Oh, sorry. No, that's correct. They do use their smell of carbon dioxide to home in on humans because that's what you breathe out. So they use it to home in on
us. I have a lot of that in my body then.
They home in on you.
Yes, do they?
Right, OK. Now, what's your question about ghosts?
It's not really a question. It was actually... we lived in an old chapel and manse. And on moving in, the lady that presented herself only presents herself to gentlemen. She was a Quaker.
Oh, this is your ghost, is it?
Yes.
Oh, right.
A Quaker lady.
A Quaker?
Yes. Mm. Dressed in grey and always reading a prayer book.
Mm.
If ever a woman was in the room, she wouldn't appear. We also had in that house, on breaking through a wall from the manse into the chapel, we had voices. And when my husband decorated in the actual manse, a head of Christ appeared on the wall where there was nothing there before after just using plain emulsion.
Now, this sounds really shocking. I mean, were you into ghosts and things at all before you started having these experiences, or were you already quite a ghost convert?
Not at all. This was just something that happened. I mean, the actual head of Christ that appeared with long hair and just his face, it was just sort of head and the top of his shoulders, was seen not by just my husband and I, but six other people.
So when did all this happen then?
This was 1986.
Was it all in one sort of time cluster, or has it been happening ever since?
We moved in the June 85 with my mother, who's now dead. And we moved out in the December of the 86.
Right, so it was actually that triggered you to leave, was it?
No, not at all.
Oh, right.
Fortunately, it was my mother moving out of the house is the reason why we moved. It was partly renovated, and we bought it. And we then completed the renovation and made a home for her and a home for us within the one building.
I mean, you know that houses with a ghost now are very saleable. Adds a lot to the value of the house.
Well, we wish we had never had to leave it because we absolutely adored the place anyway.
Should we ask Tony what he thinks about your experiences?
Yes, it had a graveyard as well, by the way.
Right.
Absolutely fascinating case, this one. We don't get cases like this these days. Unfortunately, the number of cases that we're getting in the society, in London and generally, seem to be diminishing. Tell me, was there any previous experience, other people who had been in the house had experiences like this?
Apparently, yes, this lady had shown. We were told after we had seen it that the lady had shown herself to a gentleman whilst he was visiting the couple that owned the house for afternoon tea. His wife got up with the owner of the house to go into the kitchen and make tea, and while sitting on the sofa, the middle of the three seats suddenly moved.
So you've got a poltergeist activity as well. Yeah. That, again, is very unusual. Normally you get somebody seeing an apparition or a ghost and they don't take much notice. They don't appear to be aware of the human beings watching them. And you get the sound of footsteps, you don't get things moving as well. This is a fascinating case.
Yes, but it's...
I think you ought to write it up, you know.
Do you really?
I do, yes.
Oh.
I mean, the kind of cases that we've had in the past going way back 100 years, this is the kind of case equals that. We do not get this kind of case these days. Somebody say they see a ghost, it lasts about 5 seconds, 5 to 10 seconds. It's somebody walking down a corridor, or they suddenly see somebody appear through a locked door, and then it disappears. But this has got a lot in it, a great deal in it.
Well, it is absolutely, I mean, two of the gentlemen, unfortunately, also, since this has happened, have died. Mm. One was like a second father to me, and the other was a very great male friend of ours. But my husband actually saw the lady. He was walking from the kitchen, in fact, through. It was very, very old. Just over the, when we were there in 86, it was over 250 years old.
Right.
A gentleman had had it before us and had started to renovate it but ran out of money. Mm. And that's when we bought it. But as we broke through the wall upstairs from the manse into mm-hmm. the chapel,
yep.
Which had had the gallery landing taken out of it, it was the day after that we heard voices, not just myself, but my husband as well. And this lady also, she was the one that was downstairs. But the figure of Christ actually appeared, my husband decorated downstairs as a last lap with ordinary paint, and this head appeared on the wall.
That's Carol, fascinating. Is it near Cambridge, or is it far away, or what?
Sorry, it's in Hadley in Suffolk.
Right. I see. Well, I really think you ought to write that up, because we don't get this kind of case these days at all.
Well, Carol,
we're quite worried we're not getting cases
Carol,
at all.
If you want, you can have a chat to us afterwards about it. Would that help?
Yes, it would.
All right, then. Thank you very much for your time. We've got to move on, because we have a lot of calls coming in, OK? Thanks for your call. OK, Jack is up next. Jack.
Hiya.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Where are you calling from, Jack?
Billericay.
Oh, right, OK. What you got for us?
Well, could seeing a ghost be just a coincidence?
No, not really, I don't think. We don't honestly know the cause of people seeing ghosts. There's a lot of argument about it. It's been going on for years. People say that ghosts come back from the dead. Other people say that they're hallucinations. I don't think they're coincidence. The only trouble is that when ghosts appear, they suddenly appear. Nobody knows that they're coming. We haven't had many cases lately, if any, for a number of years, where somebody can summon up a ghost. In fact, this is one of the weaknesses. So, no, I wouldn't say they show coincidence.
OK, thank you.
Right.
Jack.
Yeah.
Do you fancy heading off down to the Royal Institution?
Probably.
Yeah, it's good down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're interested in science technology, it's a good place.
Yeah.
You have to have a go at the competition, though. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right, then. I'll give you a fact. You have to tell us whether you think it's science fact or science fiction. It's best of three.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. First one. The first computer was invented over 150 years ago. The first computer was invented over 150 years ago. Science fact or science fiction?
Science fact.
Yes, that's right. Charles Babbage apparently designed the first difference engine, a vast mechanical calculator, in 1830. And even though it was actually not built in his lifetime, he earned the title of forefather of the modern computer.
There is actually a working model of that down in the Science Museum, if you want to go and have a look at it. Right, question two. Your intestines are over 30 metres long. Your intestines are over 30 metres long. Fact or fiction?
Fact.
I'm a bit worried now about how long your intestines are, but apparently the small intestine is about 5 or 6 metres long, your large intestine is about 1.5, so that's only 7. Oh. But is it true, Chris, that if you open up your intestines and spread them out, they're the size of a tennis court?
Probably, because they have an amazing surface area to absorb
all
the food.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right, because the surface has a lot of wrinkles in it to have a very big surface area so you can absorb things. Not too bad so far then, Jack. You've got one out of two so far, so it's 50%. Next one. Glass is made of the same substance as sand. Glass is made of the same substance as sand. Science fact or science fiction?
Is it science fact?
It is indeed, yes. Glass and sand are both made of silica. And in fact, to make glass, what you do is heat up sand.
So they have it 2 out of 3. Not bad. Puts you equal in the lead so far. All right?
OK.
All right, then. If no one else beats you, you're off to the Royal Institution tomorrow.
Sweet.
All right. Who are you going to take with you?
Probably my family.
Oh, that's good. And, you know, next week, are you into space science at all?
Yeah, actually, I am.
How would you like to meet a real, live Russian astronaut, so a cosmonaut. In fact, there's two of them, and they're coming to Cambridge. How would you like to meet up with them and get their autographs and have a chat with them, get photographs with them?
I'd be delighted.
Because next week we've got Alan Rowe is coming in, actually, and it's going to be called From Mir to Here, and it's going to be all about the experiences that the Russian cosmonauts had on their trip into space. They're coming to Cambridge the week after, but we've got VIP tickets for someone to go, so you could be one of them if you give us a ring next week. You have to ring up to take part, though.
All right, then.
All right?
All right, and thanks.
Cheers, then. Thanks very much for your call.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Right, OK, let's head over to Mark, who is driving in his car, apparently. I hope he's pulled over. Hi, Mark. Is Mark there? Do we have a Mark? Nope, haven't got a Mark. Okie dokie. The one thing I want to talk about now is vegetables, because everyone is being told continuously you should always eat lots of vegetables. It's much better for your health. But how should you actually cook them to make sure that they are the best for you they possibly can be? You've got a lot of choices. You could boil them, you could steam them, you could put them in a pressure cooker, or you could put them in the microwave. But nutritionists in Spain say that the overwhelmingly best way to prepare your vegetables is in a steamer, because they were comparing the levels of a substance called flavonoids. And flavonoids are things called antioxidants, and they're extremely important because they mop up highly nasty chemicals called free radicals that can damage your DNA and cause you to have cancer. And so the flavonoids are the crucial anti-cancer ingredient in vegetables. And the amount of flavonoids that are left in vegetables after cooking is therefore an index of how good they are for you. So if you microwave your vegetables, let's ask the girls, how much of the good-for-you bit of your vegetables do you think are left if you microwave them?
Oh, I don't want to guess, because that's how I cook my vegetables normally. I'll say it's 75% left in.
So you think you lose 25%. Helen?
I'm going to go for more. I think it's more like half. I think you might lose half of it.
Well, it's actually far worse than that. Over 95% of the good-for-you bit of your vegetables is lost if you microwave them.
No!
Boiling is not much better. If you boil your vegetables, how much do you think that leaves?
91%.
No, you're being too accurate and you're being over the top. It's actually 50%. You wash out 50% of the goodies in your vegetables if you boil them. Okay? What about pressure cooking?
That's probably less, because it's a really just intense cooking, isn't it?
No, other way, actually. Not too bad.
No.
Pressure cooking leaves about 25% of the goodies, but steaming them is overwhelmingly the best way. And I can see Tony Cornell nodding now. He obviously steams his vegetables. Over 90% of the goodies are left behind if you steam them.
But can you eat them raw? Would that be even better?
You can eat them raw, but some people do argue that cooking them does actually help the goodies to get out, because the heat doesn't destroy the goodies. What's actually happening when you boil them up or microwave them is that you're getting either very big hot spots inside the vegetables that destroys the flavonoids, but more normally when you boil them, it just leaches out into the water, and then people throw the water down the drain, and then you don't get the goodies. So steam your vegetables is the crucial bottom line.
Scientifically proven by the naked scientists.
Well, not by the naked scientists, by the scientists in Spain, but yes, steam your vegetables. Let's try Mark again. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Where are you calling from then, Mark?
Welwyn Garden City. I love, got a Scottish accent. I do live in Welwyn Garden City.
Oh, Welwyn Garden City. That's good. Yeah. What have you got for us?
Well, it was really strange. It was it happened Sunday. We were sitting watching television, myself, my wife, my little one who's 2, and my one who's about 15 weeks. And we were just sort of, it was probably about 8 o'clock, and we had something fly across the kitchen. And the kitchen door was open, and we could, you know, just at the same time as it happened, I actually seen what it was, and it was a tray that we have, like little mugs and coffee and things. So we just thought, oh, that was strange. So we didn't really think too much of it. And then it happened again later on, and we thought, right, okay. We just tried to ignore it. Then it was settled in for the night. We went to bed, and all of us, including the kids, got woken up at 4:45 in the morning as if someone was in our bedroom and had screamed from the top of their voice. And it woke us up that much. It really frightened us all. And the kids were saying, little one was saying, what was that noise, you know? And that was it. We were up all morning. We couldn't put a thing, you know. It was really horrible. So I couldn't explain it. So
have you ever had anything like this happen to you before?
Well, I've had some experiences, but nothing as sort of threatening as that. I mean, a couple of weeks before that, we had someone tapping on our window, and we thought it was maybe kids or something, kidding on. But I was actually quite close to the window, and I opened the window, and there was nobody there. And it's just, it's things like that, it's just, I said to my wife, I'm sure there's nothing that'll hurt us, but it was more threatening, I think, last week. And, if anyone's obviously doubting in ghosts, and you know, I wish they were there, you know, that night, and they would have probably changed their mind and believing in them, you know, so, oh.
Well, it's a poltergeist effect. We don't know what causes poltergeist effects. One of the things that I think I can reassure you about, mm-hmm. and that is, although it is very frightening, I don't know of one case of a poltergeist where anybody's really been hurt. They're mischievous. For some unknown reason, they upset people. Don't know why. Mm-hmm. Cause? Don't know. Some people say that it's tension in the family, tension in the person. But other people say it's a spirit that's come back, attached to the house in some way or other. It's upset and it throws things about. I don't like that last one. It doesn't really appeal to me very much.
No, no.
But the main thing is that it cannot give you any serious hurt. Good history of that. Tell it to go away and it probably will.
I mean, what makes poltergeists appear?
We don't know. We just don't know.
I mean, and when you say they don't hurt people, yeah. If they throw things around,
yeah.
they are, surely.
No. I've done about 4 cases now where things have been thrown around. And what is interesting is that when a ball bearing is thrown hard and it hits the wall, it dents it. When the ball bearing is thrown and it hits a person, it doesn't hurt the person.
Right.
So there's some form of intelligence there. But what kind of intelligence is doing that kind of thing, we don't know. They behave like mischievous, naughty children. There's nothing intelligent about it at all.
So
I don't know if it's a coincidence or anything, but I'd actually bought a couple of old items from a car boot sale that morning, and I don't know if I'd brought something in with it, and maybe that's an explanation, I don't know.
A poltergeist in an iron.
The
you imported it. I don't know of any cases like that.
They
generally seem to be
fixed
to a house. But one of the things about poltergeists, they don't last that long. Normally, a poltergeist outbreak's something like about a month, but not longer. But I do assure you, they cannot do any serious damage.
So I'd heard, actually, Tony, that yeah. poltergeist activity was often associated with teenagers and adolescents. Is
yes,
that true?
That's an old one. And we've done research into that. We looked into something like 500 cases of poltergeist outbreaks. And it doesn't apply to children. It applies to all. I mean, obviously, a poltergeist outbreak is going to happen when there are children in a family. But it's not due to the children. The suggestion is that it's puberty, you see. But
yeah.
We can't really say that that's the case.
That's what I'd heard.
Okay. While you're on the old line there, Mark, do you fancy having a go at the competition?
Yeah, go on then. Might as well.
Do you fancy going to the Royal Institution?
Say again, sorry?
You can go off to the Royal Institution tomorrow.
Right.
Find out about technology into the 21st century.
Oh, yeah, I'd like that.
All right, here we go then. It's science fact or science fiction. We'll give you best of 3 statements, and you have to tell us whether you think each one in turn is a fact or whether we made it up. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, first one here. A housefly has 4,000 lenses in its eyes. A housefly has 4,000 lenses in its eyes. Is that science fact or science fiction?
I'd say that's science fiction.
I'm afraid it's true. Insects like houseflies have multifaceted compound eyes and each contain over 4,000 individual lenses.
Okay, next question. Most monkeys have evidence of broken bones caused by falling out of trees. Most monkeys have evidence of broken bones caused by falling out of trees. Fact or fiction?
Actually, that's fiction.
No, that's actually true. So researchers in Japan have found, they've been studying the skeletons of macaque monkeys and found that over half of them had healed fractures, especially males. And these monkeys don't fight and there's no biting. So they concluded that they must have fallen out of trees.
Sloppy monkeys. They need to get better at their climbing. Okay, last question.
Yep.
When an aircraft takes off, your body momentarily weighs less because of the acceleration of the plane. When an aircraft takes off, your body momentarily weighs less because of the plane's acceleration. Science fact or science fiction?
No, that actually weighs more.
Yes. Well done, that's it. Yeah, as you accelerate, you feel heavier. You do feel lighter, or you are actually lighter, if you drop in altitude, like if you're in turbulence, and you get that terrible feeling of your stomach in your mouth, and you do feel lighter. You are lighter then.
I used to be in the Air Force, that's how I knew that one.
Oh, no, we were probably teaching you to suck eggs then.
Not at all.
Okay, Mark, I hope you're enjoying the programme.
Yes, I am.
All right, well, 1 out of 3, which puts you in second place so far this evening.
Okay,
all right?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Naked Scientists. It's Chris, Kat, and Helen, Anne Schwen and Caroline and Vanessa is on the phone, here with you through till 7 o'clock this evening, broadcasting to the BBC in Essex, Cambridgeshire, Northampton, Beds, Bucks and Hearts on BBC Three Counties Radio. If you would like to give us a call, we're talking ghosts this evening and we'll be joined very shortly by Professor Richard Wiseman. In the studio at the moment is Tony Cornell, who is a Vice President of the Society for Psychical Research. And so if you have any questions you would like to put to him about ghosts, the nature of hauntings, poltergeists, that kind of thing, what they really are, give us a call, 08459 25 2000. As I say, we'll be talking to Sue in Ramsey Heights very shortly, who would like to ask about ghosts, and Richard Wiseman's up next.
Football means finding a team and sticking with it.
It's so tight.
Being there when you can't actually be there.
This could be a red card!
So, this season, there's a website that lets you know what matches you can hear on BBC Radio, wherever you live.
Great shot, Jovan, it hits the crossbar!
Whether they're in Europe, the Premiership, or just down the road.
Into the bottom corner!
Check out the options and see how you can be there with your team.
A terrific display. What a fantastic goal.
At bbc.co.uk/Cambridgeshire.
It is the Naked Scientists, Chris, Helen and Kat, here with you through till 7, helping us to produce the show this evening. Xuan Gui, Caroline Campbell and Vanessa is on the phones. She's a very nice lady. If you want to talk to her, give her a call, 08459 25 2000, or you can drop us an email, chris@nakedscientists.com. We're talking ghosts this evening and right now we're talking to Richard Wiseman. Hi, Richard.
Hello there.
Now, Richard, we've been talking to Tony, who I believe you actually know quite well.
Oh, I know Tony very well. We go back years, far too long.
I think it's fair to say that Tony's something of a believer in ghosts, but you yourself have an alternative hypothesis for what you think hauntings are.
Well, I think the term ghosts incorporates many different phenomena. So most of my research has been into what are called hauntings, buildings where people go to the same place and independently over time report having very weird experiences. So suddenly feeling very cold or a sense of presence, whatever. And I carried out two very large-scale experiments, one at Hampton Court and another in Edinburgh, where we went into haunted locations and looked at the role being played by the environmental factors. And what we found was that, yes, indeed, there are places where people do report these very strange sensations, and they don't know anything about the reputation of the building. They go there and have a strange experience, and if you believe in ghosts, that can seem to you as evidence of the haunting. What we found was the environmental factors, that those places were slightly colder, or they had an unusual electromagnetic field, or they just looked like a rather scary place, and so people were scaring themselves and then interpreting it as a ghost. So I think lots of the time there's a psychological explanation for what's going on.
So I have a question. So you mentioned just then electromagnetic fields. So can electromagnetic fields actually affect our brains? This is part of the mobile phone research. People are wondering about this. So can this give people the image of there being things there?
Well, this is probably the most controversial of the various ideas. I mean, it's very easy to see how you could walk into a room that's slightly colder or one that's got some dark corners and scare yourself. When we come to talking about magnetic fields, we're talking about naturally occurring fields, and they are very, very weak. So the notion that they directly affect your brain, that's probably not going to be the case, because the brain is fairly well isolated from the world. It may be that it's affecting parts of our body, so it's literally, for example, making the hairs on the back of your arm stand up or the back of your neck stand up, and so you think, you know, that there's something scary in that location. But that is a very, very controversial theory. When you come to talking about, for example, mobile phones, you're talking about fields which are much, much stronger, and it would be dangerous to take that research and generalise it to the ghost work.
Because, Richard, there was a study, and I'm not sure how robust it was, but it was done about a year ago by some Germans who were able to demonstrate that when people were lined up with the Earth's magnetic field, then they were able to detect a very dim light source more readily when they were in alignment with the Earth's magnetic field than when they were not in alignment with it. And some people have suggested that in some way magnetic fields are therefore influencing your nervous system, and that may account for why some people can see a ghost and other people in the same room can't.
Well, it's certainly true that there are very large individual differences when it comes to detecting any weak stimuli. So some people are very sensitive, other people are not. The ones that are sensitive are the ones which tend to have been reporting ghostly experiences in the past. So there may be something to it. And I really think it's very, very early days in terms of the science here. Whenever you carry out an experiment into something as controversial as magnetic fields, you need to be quite certain that you've ruled out all possible artifacts, and that's very difficult to do. Slowly, though, those methods, like any other area of science, will develop over time. And it's exactly the same when you look at something like infrasound, the very low-frequency sound waves, which, again, some people have associated with haunted sites. We've carried out some research where we put that those low-frequency waves into actually a hall, and some people were very sensitive to them, and they affected them, made them feel unusual, and made them have experiences which they may have attributed to a ghost. Other people weren't at all sensitive. So I think we're only just starting to understand why some places have a reputation for being haunted.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know. Maybe if Tony could answer this, and then if Richard could comment. Are hauntings really restricted to kind of creepy places?
No.
You know, is it a suggestion? Are modern houses haunted?
Well, I've come across some cases where that does apply, but Richard is right in many of the aspects he says. But I'm interested in the kind of ghost which is much more detailed. Somebody walking down a corridor, seen by other people, seen by several people.
But now, how do they that mainly
is,
happen
how
in
that
in
is
old
created
houses?
By electromagnetic waves, I don't know. That's a little bit too complex, you see.
Okay, we've got Sue, who is on the phone and wants to ask us a question about ghosts. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
What's your question, Sue?
Well, I've been listening, obviously, and it's answering some of it, but not all of it. Now, children, I understand they're very susceptible to feelings and seeing things. My daughter's had experiences till she was about 21. On the same token, my grandson's also had experiences. I never actually saw anything, just used to have a feeling. What I can't understand is I actually saw somebody look over my daughter's shoulder one day when I was leaving, and I looked up at the window to wave to her. Now, I can describe the man to a T. Now, is that a sighting, or is it my imagination? How does it affect only children or adults, or... I don't know.
Right, who wants to go first? Tony or Richard? Who should we have first? Tony, why don't you go first, then we can get Richard.
Okay. Well, I can't give an answer to that either. I mean, I know sometimes children do imagine faces, and they, if you like, create trends. Maybe the children are seeing something in their own imagination. You say you saw something. It might have been your imagination, too. It might be something in the kind of a stimulation that Richard is talking about. Those kind of things, those brief things like that, I think you've got to look at a human cause, not an external cause.
Richard, what's your take?
Well, very similar to Tony's, in that once you have somebody with an unusual experience like that, it's very difficult to know exactly what's going on. So we know, for example, children have very vivid imaginations, and there may be some of that involved, or it may be that some people are seeing something out there, like some kind of odd reflection, and then seeing meaning in it, literally seeing a face which isn't there. I think the key thing for me that would settle it one way or another is, can you capture this on film?
And
after years of trying, I haven't seen a single ghost photo that would convince me there really is something out there.
The one thing that Sue said was that members of her family. Now, is there any evidence, or has anyone looked at families to see if there's something that revolves around the family, or perhaps has a genetic underlying sort of trait to it that means that some people are more predisposed to being susceptible to this kind of experience, whether it's real or not? I mean, whether, you know, internally generated or whether it's a real environmental phenomenon. Is there any evidence to go on that, Richard?
Well, I think
we
so.
We haven't looked at the genetics
you go
of
ahead,
it.
Richard, you have it. Have first go. Go on.
Okay, thanks, Tony. I should perhaps explain to listeners we're in different studios here, so we can't see one another. But certainly we've looked at the notion of how people's past experiences impact on the future. Mm-hmm. And what you find is that people have had lots of experiences in the past, they're the ones that are reporting all sorts of odd experiences in our experiments. So certainly in that sense, the past predicts the future. We haven't looked at anything genetic, and I'm not aware of any research into that, but maybe it is out there.
Well, there are some cases, as you know, Richard, called collective cases, and we've got in the SBR God knows how many cases of that. So there may be something genetic. I think it's a point that people have not really examined or looked at in great detail yet. It's something that I certainly think should be looked at. I mean, there are a number of cases where you can see, if you look at the records, brothers and sisters have the same ability. I think I know of four cases where you can go through different families where they've all seen ghosts of some form or other. So it's something that I think we ought to look at and not just dismiss out of hand.
OK, let's find out if Sue wants to have a go at the competition. Sue, how do you fancy heading off to the Royal Institution?
I'd love to.
Okay. It's very simple. Science fact or science fiction. Are you ready?
Okie dokie. But I'll try.
All right, then. Here we go. First question. On a clear day, a person with good eyesight can see almost 100 miles. On a clear day, a person with good eyesight can see almost 100 miles. Is that science fact or science fiction?
I would have thought fiction quite that far, yes.
You're actually correct, but for the wrong reason, in that you can actually see 93 million miles and more, because that's how far the sun is away, and you can see the stars as well.
I know on land it's about 14 miles, isn't it?
Yeah, but what we're saying is that you can see the sun, and that's 96 million miles away, and you can actually see the Andromeda galaxy at night beyond that, which is light years away, so you can see further than 14 miles. Next question. On reaching the Earth, meteorites often start fires if they land in dry areas. On hitting the ground, meteorites often start fires if they land in dry areas. Science fact or science fiction?
Fact, yeah. Yeah, I just think, because I know they can come in through the atmosphere. I'm just thinking about land. Yes, I think they could.
I'm afraid not. But mostly meteorites will cool down as they come through the atmosphere, and so they're quite cold when they arrive. So there's no chance of starting any fires, although you might have the misfortune as that chap we were talking about a couple of weeks ago who had a meteorite land on his new bathroom.
Totally wiped out his bathroom, unfortunately. There's a guy from New Orleans. Renovated his bathroom and came home to find a meteorite had wiped it out. Right, the next question. The world record for consecutive loop of the loops in an aeroplane is 2,368. Science fact or science fiction?
I'd say that was fiction.
No, it's actually true. In 1986, the specially modified acrobatic aircraft of David Childs performed that. That would really make you throw up.
Have you ever tried doing sequential loop the loops under the water in a swimming pool? Because you get really giddy, actually. Mm. That sounds really bad. Sue, thanks very much for your call.
Right,
have you been enjoying the programme?
Yes, definitely. It's interesting.
Do you listen every week, or is this you just discovered us?
Well, I normally listen to radio, but not always this time of the evening. We normally have dinner.
Great.
So, but yeah, I found this really interesting. I love anything to do with the paranormal.
Brilliant. Well, we've got another 15 minutes, and we've got Richard Wiseman and Tony Cornell, two of the best people for the job here in the studio, so we'll be talking to them a bit more, so keep listening, and hopefully we'll see you next week as well. You got 1 out of 3, which puts you in equal second place tonight.
Lovely.
Thanks for your call. Okay, let's head over to Joyce. Hi, Joyce.
Hello there.
Hi, what can we do for you this evening?
Well, I'd like to say something about children. I worked with children for years, and part of my training, we were in a very, very old house, and it was supposed to be haunted. I didn't actually see, but you could sense at times that there was somebody about. The children, too, seemed to be very, very sensitive, and they were under fives, and I feel that some children and some animals, some young animals probably, are very sensitive to ghosts. And I'd like to hear what your...
No, some very good points. Let's go to Tony first. Tony, animals
yes.
sensitive to hauntings?
Well, I think they are. I've got an animal, I had an animal which seemed to be very sensitive to something that was in a particular corner. But on examination, I found it was a nasty smell. But there are cases in the SPR's archives going back quite a few centuries, one way or another. 150 years of good cases examined. There are 5 very good examples of animals, particularly cats, seeing something which the human being didn't look at first. And when the human being turned to see exactly what the animal was looking at, they saw a ghost. Mind you, there are not many cases, but I think this is an aspect that ought to be looked at in greater detail.
Yes.
Joyce, I've also got Richard Wiseman on the line. Richard, what do you think about the animals story?
I think that Tony's absolutely right. It's something we should carry out more research into. Certainly, it would be consistent with some of the explanations I've been talking about. We know that animals are very, very sensitive to certain types of environmental cues. So maybe they're picking up a sound that we're not hearing, or again, the magnetic fields, or again, a drop in temperature, something like that. But to be honest, I mean, it's hard enough conducting experiments with humans. The idea of taking, you know, animals in large numbers into some of these haunted locations, I think, it could be a very enjoyable experiment, but I'm not certain it would yield a huge amount of information.
Not something that you've done yet then, Richard?
No, but if anyone has got a cat or a dog that reliably detects ghosts, then we're on for giving it a go.
The thing is that animals are very sensitive to things which we as humans not necessarily are, because I have heard examples in my role as a doctor of individuals who've said that their pets could predict when they were going to have certain things like seizures or epileptic, you know, episodes. So animals probably are sensitive to things. And I'm wondering, from what you were saying earlier about ghosts perhaps being a manifestation of, say, infrasound, you know, these low-level sound waves in the environment, maybe animals are reacting to something environmental like that.
Could be.
I think...
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, for example, with the epileptic fits, my understanding is that animals are very good at picking up some of the smell cues which people emit before they have those fits, and that's actually before they're even aware they're going to have the fit. So, you know, the animal's world is far richer than our own, and it's very difficult when you're testing animals. For example, we did some work looking at an allegedly psychic dog, just how you rule out the possibility of the animal receiving cues from all over the place because you're not even certain what signals it's sensitive to.
I think cows are very sensitive.
Well, they lie down when it's going to rain, apparently, don't they?
Well, I've visited a farm nearby. We have some ghosts in Wingrove, in the village, and I visited a farm, and when it came to about 5 o'clock, the lady said it suddenly all went quiet. I mean, the cows were inside to be milked. Suddenly all went very, very quiet, and she said, oh, yes, that's the time when the lady walks. And she said every night at 5, there's complete silence there from all the animals that were on the farm were completely silent.
It's an interesting story, Joyce. We're going to have to move on because we have a lot of calls to get through. And if you would like to call up 08459 25 2000. But before we get onto the next one, Joyce, do you fancy having a go at the competition?
Well, I can't get up to London.
OK. Well, we have got some books in store as well, so we could give you a go if you like.
Oh, right.
Yeah, do you want to have a quick go?
Okay, then a quick
go. All right, then. First question. Genetically modified silkworms could be used to make human skin in future. Science fact or science fiction?
Science fact.
Yes, that's right. Apparently, Japanese scientists have been able to add a gene into silkworms that means they can make collagen, which is what our skin is made out of. And in fact, anyway, without this genetic modification, they have 10% of collagen in their silk, and you can extract that and use it for therapeutic use.
Well, that was a good guess, then.
Well, you shouldn't have said it was a guess. It was very good. When the space shuttle re-enters the Earth's atmosphere, it's doing over 18,000 miles an hour. 18,000 miles an hour. Fact or fiction?
I would think fiction.
No, it's true. And the friction generated by the air going over the shuttle at this kind of speed heats it up outside to 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit. So it needs all those protective tiles around it. That's incredible.
Okay, one out of two so far, Joyce. Not bad. Next question. Patients don't trust a fat doctor as much as they trust a thin one. Science fact or science fiction?
Science fact.
Yes, funny as it may sound, apparently it is true. If your doctor doesn't look particularly healthy, it might be a bit flabby around the edges. A study in America of 200 patients showed that, in fact, they didn't trust so much what the fat doctor said to them compared to the thin ones. So that's a message to you. I think Chris is all right, actually. I think he's probably...
said that.
Joyce, thanks very much for your call. Let's talk to Carol. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
Where are you calling from?
St Albans.
OK. And are you enjoying the programme?
Well, I've only just switched in, and I heard Richard Wiseman was on.
Ah, right.
That man intrigues me.
Oh, does he? I'm sure he'd be intrigued to know that.
Yes.
What can we do for you?
If he doesn't believe in hauntings and ghosts and spirits and things, can he tell me why, when I visited a house one day and was looking round the rooms, my head was suddenly being beaten? And I put my arms over my head, and my arms were being beaten, so much so that I looked for the bruises, and when I took my hands off my head felt as though it was bleeding, and I was looking for the blood.
But you didn't see any, presumably?
No, but my head was bruised for days.
Shall we ask Richard what he thinks? Richard, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think the short answer is that I probably don't know exactly what's going on. When you have a one-off case like that, and it's happened, it's in the past, it's very difficult to carry out any science. Certainly in some of our research, for example, in Edinburgh and Hampton Court, we had people having very extreme reactions. So we had some people that felt they'd been burnt by a candle, and they'd quickly roll up their sleeve and there was no burn marks on their arm. Or they'd see a figure crossing the doorway and call out, and it turned out there was nobody there. So certainly people have these rather extreme and unusual experiences, and often they are in places which have a reputation for being haunted. And what we don't know yet is whether these things are simply a figment of the imagination, because sometimes our imaginations do run riot and play tricks on us, or there is something ghostly going on.
Well, it so happens that when I got home and read the book of this place, that it was the haunted chamber, and quite a few very bloody murders had taken place in it. But I did not know it at the time.
Again, that's consistent. I mean, with our work, because one worry is that people arrive at a haunted location knowing the reputation of it, and so the experiences are driven really by their expectations, we really use people who do not know the reputation of the place they're going into. And what we've seen again and again is even though they don't know anything about the area, they do have unusual experiences in the part of that area which is supposed to be haunted. So I don't think these things are driven by expectation. I think they're driven by something in our environment, the way the place looks or the air temperature or whatever, and that scares us, and then our mind starts playing tricks on us.
Well, my mind did not play tricks on me, believe you me. And also, where I live in St. Albans, I do have a spirit in the house, and I have seen it. I know who it is, and I have seen it. But it does not explain when I had a little girl staying and she was curled up on my lap and she kept on looking up, and in the end she said, "Who is that man?"
That's very strange. Carol, we are a little bit short for time. Do you want to have a quick go at the quiz?
Yes.
OK, here we go then. First question. The top speed of a housefly is about 10 miles an hour. The top speed of a housefly is about 10 miles an hour. Fact or fiction?
I wouldn't be at all surprised. Fact.
No, it's much slower, only 4 miles an hour.
Not when they buzz round here, believe you me.
A fully loaded Boeing 747 ready for takeoff weighs about 200 tonnes. Science fact or science fiction?
I should think so. Heavy. Go on.
You're going to go for fact,
yeah.
Are you?
I'm afraid it's even heavier than that. It's almost twice that, about 400 tonnes, and half of that weight is just the fuel.
Yes.
Okay, you're doing very well. Got zero so far. Next question. The European Space Agency, are planning to launch a fleet of small satellites to defend the Earth against attacks from space. What do you think of that?
I've heard something about this, something to do with Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I'll say fact, but it'll be...
Yeah. No, the ESA are planning to launch a flotilla of microsatellites that can visit near-Earth objects. So, like asteroids, to help us work out if they're going to collide with us.
Oh, well, so, really, it was right, really.
Well, not quite, but thank... you didn't quite get enough to get there this time. Thanks very much for your call, Carol.
Bye.
Let's talk to Dave. Hi, Dave.
Good evening.
You're in Westcliff.
I am indeed, yes.
We're into about the last 4 minutes, so we'll have to hurry you a little bit, but what have you got for us?
Well, we haven't got a ghost as such, we don't see anything, but we have... solid objects appear and disappear. The first time it happened, I put my hand in the cupboard to get a tin of paint down, and a half a crown and two pennies appeared on the shelf. The second time, it was in the same room, a stone appeared in midair, went across the room and hit the window, but didn't do any damage. We had a jar on a biscuit, a lid on a biscuit jar, spin round and jump across the room. And the last thing was a few weeks ago, I was in my shed, I had four large coach screws on the bench, they can't roll, they've got square heads, and I laid them in a line, I turned to pick up four washers to put on, and as I turned back to put them on, there was only three, one of them had disappeared. It couldn't roll, it was between two items, it didn't fall on the floor, but one just totally disappeared.
Never Tony, this sounds like something for you to mention.
It's a typical poltergeist effect. Have you had it before? Have you heard anything like this before?
Well, this has been over a period of about 6 years.
6 years? That's a long time for poltergeist. Nobody's pulling tricks on you, as far as you know.
No, I was totally alone. When the lid came off the jar, my two sons were sitting on a settee, and I was sort of sitting at 90 degrees to them.
Right.
The jar was between us, and so three of us saw the lid revolve, jump off and roll across the room.
Well, it's a typical poltergeist effect. Whether or not it's done by the dead or done by some peculiar human faculty we don't know anything about, we honestly don't know. It's a case, really, poltergeist. We still do not really understand. There's all sorts of theories.
One other thing is, one of our cats, a female cat, when she's sitting in the front room, sometimes she'll look at the end of the room. Her ears go up, and her eyes follow something around the room. You can't see anything there, but it's almost like she's following a person walking around the room.
Dave.
Yeah.
You've got 1 minute. Do you want to have a very quick go at the competition?
I can't make London, unfortunately, but I'll have a go.
All right, then. First question. Plants and trees look green because they absorb green light from the sun, which they turn into energy to help them grow. Fact or fiction?
Fiction.
Yes, that's right. Well done. Plants look green because they have a substance called chlorophyll, which reflects green light.
Yes.
Okay, next question. Scientists have invented a computer that's the size of a piece of DNA. Fact or fiction?
Fiction.
Oh, no, sorry, I've made it wrong.
It's all going to pieces. No.
Okay, sorry, you got that one wrong, so I messed that one up. A hummingbird flaps its wings 200 times a second. Fact or fiction?
Fact.
Sorry, Dave. We're going to have to leave it there. The winner this week is Jack, who's off to the Royal Institution. Thank you for listening to us this week. We've had a wonderful edition of the show. Thank you to Richard Wiseman and Tony Cornell. We're back next week with Philip Wright from Sheffield.
Sorting out the sparks from the quarks. The Naked Scientists. For more information, get online at nakedscientists.com. That's nakedscientists.com.